CliffCentral.com.
That's correct. That is the MKT show, Cliff Central Sport. You can find it on YouTube. Subscribe and get in there while Bolelo's got really interesting guests, and you don't miss out on any of them because you don't want to join up next week and go, oh, I missed that one. Oh shit, I should have watched that live.
Made a comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Cooks. I should have been listening yesterday, and he's hilarious. He's the best. Probably the best guy in sports content right now. He is doing it.
Yeah. It's a fun show to watch. They don't just talk sport the way that you are used to hearing about sport. So just try it out. It's kind of, there's a whole lot of interesting stuff that happens on the show that has nothing to do with sport a lot of the time. And there's a lot of ribbing of each other and some very offhand comments about where people went to school and kind of whether or not people are good enough. There's some pretty nasty shit that gets said between the guys as well. So that's also fun to watch if you like that kind of thing. And when, what guy doesn't? The only reason you know men actually enjoy each other's company is when they're rude to each other. Ain't that the truth?
Touche.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just talk about something that Lebang wants to address this morning. And it's me, Lebang, and Bulelo to look after you through the course of this morning. We're also going to be checking in with somebody who I really like talking to and I haven't had on the show for a while, even though I had lunch with him the other day, is that fantastic man, Oresti Patricios. He's the CEO of Ornico, and they are a leading thinking group on brands, consumers, media research, entrepreneurship. And he founded Ornico all the way back in 1984. And they've become a leading provider of reputation media, advertising, and brand research in South Africa. So if you want to know about how all of that lines up, Oresti's really your guy. And he'll be joining us at about 7:30 this morning. But your thing, Lebang, for this morning is about public displays of affection. And this is something you want to raise. It's going to be a little uncomfortable for some people.
Yeah, like disclaimer. So yesterday I found myself making out with my partner so much. And I really got in the moment and I just closed my eyes and I just went in for the kiss, you know. And then I opened my eyes and my kid was just staring at me. And it was sort of a blank. I don't know how to read how he was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't ew, what are you doing? Or woo woo, go mom, go. Yeah, he just kind of looked. And so I was I don't know, am I doing too much? Should I keep going? I want to keep going, but, you know, my kid is really. So I just kind of got me thinking about PDA and if there's a line that I should draw. And obviously, there's a line that I should draw, but I had never seen my parents kiss. Never seen them holding hands. I've never seen them. I've probably seen them hug, but it wasn't a thing. And then I have friends in high school who are obviously white, whose parents were just out there, just parking lots, afternoon. It was hectic. Well, I don't know about you, but at St. Mary's in the parking lots, yay, it was just a thing. Nobody would hold back. Hands being held, kisses, what? It was a thing. So I don't know, but I think I'm reinventing, you know, something in society or within my family, culturally, because I'm down for a kiss. I'm down for affection because I want my kids to see what love looks like from inside the household.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a thing, but I know that you know, growing up, it wasn't, you know, and I wonder if maybe that scarred me in a certain way. I don't know. Am I scarred?
Yeah. I don't really too much of a public display of affection from anybody, but I do think it might be healthy in some situations. And I mean, first of all, I like the fact that you and your partner are able to just do this because, you know, why the hell not? I suppose you were in your house, right?
Yes.
So it's not really a public. It's an in-house display of affection, and your kids should know that you love each other. I think that's good, and they should know it's okay to do that. I'm not going to be one of those people who says, oh, no, that's not the right example to set, because what the hell do I know? I have actually got no position on this. I don't really have a strong opinion either way. What do you think, Mbulelo?
It's so funny that Lebang's saying this, because one of the things I wanted to talk about was on the weekend I was having coffee with a friend, and I saw this couple who looked so happy together. You know, I was that is so awesome. I'm just in a place in my life where I love seeing other people happy. And they weren't doing anything. They were just sitting there, young, I'd say 40s, like young, healthy couple, but they were just like interacting, and they were in my eye line as I was eating. And I just thought, I'm so happy for those people, because without saying anything, they just looked so connected. So if I'm a grown adult and I feel like that, I can only imagine for your child is as they figure out what's actually happening, it'll become less and less, we imposing an adult lens on it. And I love what you're saying is, love from within the house. I don't think that's like, I think it can get to a situation where we're at restaurants, you know, like, okay, we don't need that. But if you're saying it's you and your kids, that's awesome. I think that's an incredible thing. And I saw this couple on the weekend. I was like, oh my God, I don't want to be in a relationship, but I'm so happy for those people. They look so happy. And that's an awesome thing.
I like that. I'm kind of where you are. I think that, you know, you don't want people to be having full sex next to you in a restaurant. That's obviously a little bit too far.
Not while I'm eating anyway.
Let me finish. After I know the food, you want to finish, let me get the coffee. Let's all finish.
I don't know if maybe because I was a kid or I was in my teens, I just saw it more because I was looking for it more. But I kind of feel like people have become less public about their displays of affection. I somehow get the feeling that people have become more resistant to that. You know, somehow when I was a kid, I remember seeing lots of teenagers and young couples kissing each other, holding hands, hugging each other, walking around. You kind of, maybe because I was more susceptible to it at that age and I would have noticed it more. To me, it feels like there's a lot less of it going on. So it's not just
I was driving in Monte Cassino, Morrow's Arc the other day, maybe like 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Teenagers holding hands, hugging. So trust me, that thing is still very, very real, especially amongst, you know, the teenagers. I just remember growing up and sort of, I don't know, Mbulela, maybe you can help me here, but within like the Black community, it's not, you know, really encouraged almost to hold hands in public and to show this affection. I mean, we're still seeing it today, especially like around Valentine's Day. I remember there was a story of this kid, 20-year-old, who had this huge, massive teddy bear for his girlfriend for Valentine's Day. And, you know, people were laughing at him and saying, ha, 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 look at you, you know, showing your girl that you love her, ha, almost like they're making fun of him. It's almost this underlying thing that you can't express your love so openly. And that's why I'm saying, again, back in high school, in the parking lots at St. Mary's, I'd see white parents do this so openly, but never, ever see, ever, ever a Black parent being caught dead doing any of that. Not a chance.
I mean, here's the point being made by Sindile. South Africa is very conservative, Black and white, so that could be part of the reason, too. Display is the key word in this conversation, says Michael. And a lot of people also saying, I'm not one for a public display of affection, but it's lovely at home in front of the kids. I think parents showing
100%
affection to their kids in public is also very cool, according to Robin. Yeah.
But, you know, not everybody maybe gets it. You know, we have an international listener base, and I'm realizing just how international Cliff Central is the more and more I'm here with some of the people who contact me. But, you know, in SA, and I'm not saying this is everyone, there is no all and every, but let me give you an example. You know, if you are liberal, let's say white, generally across the world is liberal, is like, you know, and I also, it was a bit of a shock for me, like turning 15, 16, you know, we start hanging out now and you pitch and like, who's that on sitting on the couch and going to the fridge? Oh no, it's my girlfriend, Michelle. Wait, what do you mean? Your girlfriend's, for me, I was like, what do you mean your girlfriend's at your house with
She's
your parents?
In your
here?
House? Number
what
one. What?
Yeah.
But, just so people understand, is not all, but mostly, I think most Black kids would have grown up where even this Valentine's Day thing, by the way, and I'm talking even as adults, Gareth, if you're not married, even at 40, right, 40 plus, is if you're not married or you're the guy or you've been introduced, if you're going to come and pick her up, you pick up at the gate. We don't want to see you.
Yeah.
And that's not, I'm not exaggerating. You pick up at the gate. They don't want to see you. If you haven't been introduced as somebody with proper intentions to the household, largely, we don't want to know you. You are just somebody there on the street. You could be a drug dealer. We don't care until we know what your intentions are. You don't come inside and help yourself to a smoothie in the fridge. None of that.
not the smoothie. No, yeah.
Well, that's I think that's interesting because there are also cultural differences. There are religious families, and in some religious families, yeah, that's just not done. Also, there's some parents that there are a lot of kids who don't want to see their parents being too affectionate with each other. It makes them go, you know, and it's usually just that rebellious teenage kind of phase that they're going through.
But are they not just taught that? Like, is that not just because we watch TV and TV tells us to think it's gross? When you look at it, do you actually feel grossed out? Or is it like, could it be like, oh, that's nice? You know, really, like, think about it. Have we just been taught to think that it's gross? Like, our natural instinct shouldn't think, ew. It should be, oh, that's cool.
Here's the thing that no one's going to find ew. Tracy brings this up. There is an elderly couple on my street. They're probably in their late 70s, early 80s. They hold hands while they walk. It's so sweet every single day. That's beautiful.
Come on.
I saw a Bali the other day, Rivonia Road, as I was walking to the shops up the road. Mm-hmm. And I see him quite often. I go to that shopping center quite often. The clockwork at the traffic lights, when there's like cars or whatever, holds his lady's hand and they walk. They're like, they fit, but they're elderly, 70 plus, I would say. But the guy is just like gentlemanly. Like, I saw that dude, and every time I see him by the police station there at the top, it's like a super tricky crossing place there. Kind of just gets out in front of things, makes sure it's all good, gets his lady's hand, and they do their thing. And it is something awesome to see that still kind of lives, you know?
Yeah. Well,
Maki makes a good point. Most people don't show affection in front of their kids, but they quarrel openly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's like those people who complain about, you know, anything sexual in a movie, even if it's just two people getting into bed together and you don't see anything more than that. Yeah, oh, that's not acceptable for kids to watch, but they'll let them watch, you know, each other being murdered on TV. So that's a good point Maki brings up. And Daniel says the opposite with Afrikaans parents. You can't go somewhere with a boy if the mom or the dad didn't first meet the person.
Cool.
I remember that too. Mandia says, when my teenagers see me kissing my husband and roll their eyes, I ask them where they think they came from. They should be thankful. They should be thankful for what they see.
I love that, Mandia. Nice. I'm here for that. Yes.
But you see, there's such a range of opinions. Like Kuhle says, there are different ways to show love. It doesn't have to be public. Which is also a good point. You know, you do whatever you're comfortable with. It's not anyone else's job to police you in public. I think that everybody knows what the socially acceptable lines are. Like, you can't exactly be humping each other in the street. That's I think, you know, most people go a little bit too far. But anything else is up to you. Just do your thing. I don't think that you should have anyone else make your rules.
Now, having said that, is what say we of this is, you know, for me, number one, whenever couples start to do the whole we love each other on social media thing, I always say that relationship's on the clock. If you love each other, why are you telling us?
Yeah.
But what do we say about, because we work in that, in this world, is that, you know, people love to profit and I don't know, so sort of whatever you may call it from being public, right? But then the sharp side comes. Yeah. I always say,
if you're a girl and you date me, I was talking to somebody,
I will never have a photo of the person I'm dating on social media because it's hard enough just to date each other. I don't want to date the internet. I don't want to know what the internet thinks of my girlfriend,
right,
what she looks like, it's hard enough to date each other. But what do we say of people when things go wrong and people keep commenting and then they say, oh, we need our space. Like, no, sorry, you don't get to play that game.
Exactly. Like, the minute you show me and tell me who you're dating that openly, I'm a part of this relationship. It's no longer up to you.
Correct.
Like, I'm there. So when you ask for space, you need to ask me if you can have space. And the answer is no, because you didn't ask for space when you shoved it down my throat that you're dating this person. I think it's very tricky. Like, there's a line that we need to, like, a balance, you know, where we need to get to. Because obviously, number one, knowing your partner's love language. If you're dating somebody that wants that affirmation constantly from you or whatever, and they want you to jump on the roof and tell the world, do it, but just know what you're getting yourself into. If you're dating somebody that's just generally not interested in that stuff, lucky you. And, you know, just finding that balance with just like, you know, a little bit of celebration here and there, but don't shove it down our throats like, oh, this is my man. I love my man this much. Indota must this, blah, 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 blah. Because when shit hits the fan, you're going to be like, I need my privacy, y'all. You don't need your privacy back then. No.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. So you have to decide up front, is this going to be a relationship which I share with other people in terms of letting them in on it? Dangerous stuff. Or am I going to keep this separate? And I think that you have to, that, you know, there's certain things about your life that you just don't need to share with everybody, especially if it's before you're married or even, like, frankly, during your marriage. You know, there's some people who don't share pictures of their kids online. They just don't, they do not post pictures of their children, either because they have safety and security concerns, which is valid these days because there are creeps on the internet. But it could also just be because if I share my child with you or with some unknown person on the internet, I'm kind of giving away a little bit of something special that we have together. And the same goes for a partner, you know, romantic or otherwise.
Yeah.
Having a private life, says Michael, is a rare and precious thing since social media got humanity to post pics of everything. That's a good point. As a man of color, says Dude69, who's in a relationship with a white lady, I'm learning slowly about showing affection in public. I never used to do it because it was frowned upon by my loveless neighbors. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm learning certain things and just applying new things because we're trying to take away some of those cultural things that just don't work the day we live in. So I like that. Dude 69, I'm with you, bro.
Good for you. And I like the name, Dude 69. It's a good relationship. Loy says, interestingly, I found my friend's parents being affectionate was cute, but I actually felt awkward when seeing my parents kiss the one or two times that I saw it. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Again, everybody's got their kind of comfort zone around this stuff. So you do whatever you feel. And if anyone tries to tell you what to do, they might not be doing you a favor. Beth says, the thing is, children cannot consent to their images being shared. Even if they do consent, they don't understand the full ramifications. Well, you know, Beth, to be fair, though, what parent doesn't have a ugly, awkward, or embarrassing picture of all of us when we were little, even if it's an actual photograph instead of one that's online? And, you know, those come out at, like, 21st birthdays. They come out at weddings. They pitch up on birthday cards. You know what I'm talking about. Parents have always taken embarrassing pictures of their children.
Or they
pictures,
love it.
Pictures that we found embarrassing that you wouldn't put on the CV, you know. So there's no change there. Gareth, where is Gord? Funnily enough, Cindy, I actually heard from Gord yesterday. Gord is, he's busy, and he promises he'll join us at some point on the show. He's just got to find a time, and Gord is still crazily disorganized, but he's looking amazing. He's lost tons of weight, and he's skateboarding and
oh, really?
And rollerblading and all kinds of shit at the moment. He's lost, I don't know, 50, 60 kilos. The guy's looking like a different person, so we've got to get him on the show.
60 kilograms?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very proud of Gordo. It's looking good. Jeremy says, Nirvana are getting sued for using a naked baby's picture on the album cover of Nevermind in the 90s. We need to be careful what we post about our kids. Yeah, but this guy is so full of shit because he's suing Nirvana now because he wants money, right, for a picture. He says his parents weren't paid properly or they didn't give consent when he was a baby. You know, the famous cover of that Nirvana album where the kid is swimming. It's an infant and he's swimming and he's naked and he's swimming for a dollar bill or whatever it is. And it's a famous album cover. And in those days, you know, what they'd do is they'd airbrush in the money afterwards because they didn't have Photoshop. So you couldn't say they Photoshopped it in. They actually had to have an artist paint it in. To make an album cover like that. But the cool thing about that album is that it was world famous. It was iconic. And the kid who has grown up subsequently from that picture, every 10 years after that album had an anniversary, he would post his own picture of him like at age 10, at age 20, at age 30, where he would post the, you know, he wouldn't be naked, but he'd post the same picture. So he was already profiting off of it, and he sold some of that to make himself some money. I think that this guy's just on the take, and I think it's kind of pathetic that he wants to sue Nirvana now. I mean, even Kurt Cobain's not even around anymore. He wants to sue them now. It's like, ah, please, man. You were fine with it for the last 30 years. Now you're going to claim that you were abused?
He's quite clearly just taking the piss here. He's just taking a chance and just trying to, like milk whatever he can get out of this. Like, I can see every year he's taken the same picture, just his growth. You know, he's milking this. What are you be just thanking them for giving him a purpose?
So that's a good point right there. Jim says 90% of social media is utter bullshit, showing the world what you want them to see just to address your own insecurities. Take it all with a pinch of salt. Hey, you're speaking the truth.
Yep.
But we have,
in fairness, 90% of life is bullshit. I always believe this. There's only 10% of anything you want to be around. That's a standard rule across everywhere. You only want to be a 10%. 10% of stuff is worth your time. Everywhere. Just apply that everywhere you are all the time.
Just because it's spring day, I've got to mention this. We brought up Gord just now, who's been on the show a couple of times. He's kind of a member of the family. Another person who's a member of the family, and it's his birthday today, is Damon Calvari. It's his birthday. I think it could even be his 50th today.
Okay.
So if you want to wish Damon a happy birthday today, I don't know if he's going to be grumpy about it, probably, but that's just for anybody who's interested. All right. Just so you know, because people will ask. This kid on the Nirvana Nevermind album, MB, says he's a chup. He needs that $1 bill for being broke and not working for his own money. And similar things. Robin says he's tainted one of the best albums in the world. Yeah. And Michael says, speaking of Nirvana, did anyone see Nandi Bushell's debut drumming performance as a finale act on a recent Foo Fighters gig? That 12-year-old is an inspiration for all children. No, I didn't. But maybe I should know.
You know what I wish Dave Grohl would do? Like, he's made all of the money, right? Yeah. I just wish he'd take this guy properly to the cleaners. Like Dave Grohl, I don't know Dave Grohl. I don't really follow grunge music. But I wish he'd take like $5 million that he like of his own money and just squeeze this guy out of life. Just like sue him, like just pile it on him.
You're a really mean person, Bulelo. And I know there's a part of all of us that wants that to happen. But you know what the scary thing is in the American legal system, in the American systems of justice, you could easily spend $5 million and a judge takes the side of this douchebag. And then you end up $5 million down and he wins like a $10 million or $20 million award. So not a good idea. I don't think you know, it's so unpredictable because the judges, they can completely vacillate between sticking to the rules and being a complete stickler for like how things should and must unfold, and then at the same time they can be totally from left field and just give an award to somebody who really doesn't deserve it. I mean, you end up with some judge who had a difficult childhood or whatever, and she's like, yeah. Give them $50 million. And poor old Dave Grohl's like, I started this action and now I'm paying.
One of my mentors, an ex-employee tried to get him for about 2 million rand. He following, because he's not the guy you want to play with, this guy I'm talking about. And 15 years ago, this was 15 years ago, and we were chatting about it on the weekend, he has strung the guy out and bled him dry for 15 years now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, no, there's some people you don't want to play with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good for them. Just one quick comment here from Daniela, just to show again how diverse and different families are these days. Daniela says, I'm adopted, and I'm assuming Daniela's black here, because she says, I'd always forget to tell dates that my family was white and Jewish. So it was always funny to see the looks of confusion when I introduced my mum to my boyfriend. Never assume a damn thing.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, Daniel, did the same thing. So we were going on a snowboarding trip, and he's like, oh, my sister's coming, you know, like, and we're going overseas. So it's like, okay, we'll meet you at the airport, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I see him. So Daniel, white guy, pictures up, black chick over there. I'm like, okay, dude, you didn't tell me you had a girlfriend. I thought... Mm. no, this, but to him, it wasn't like a big thing, you know? It's like, no, this is my sister.
Yeah.
She's, and yeah, that's when I realized I am the biggest dickhead in the world.
Yeah.
That's when it hit you.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, I'm very excited to welcome to the show, not for the first time and certainly not for the last time, somebody who I had lunch with the other day. And it's always good to catch up with this man. He's got an amazing and infectious energy. He is a lover of all things business. He loves South Africa. He's an optimist. He's full of beans. He's got such a great energy. And his business, Ornico, was started in 1984. It's become a leading Pan-African provider of reputation, media, advertising, and brand research, and his name is Oresti Patricios. He's well known to people in South Africa, and he's well known to the show. Hey, Oresti, how are you?
Sure, what an introduction. Good, and you?
Yeah, nice to see you, man. I saw you the other day, yeah. And I thought, my God, why haven't we had you on the show? It's been a long time, and you guys are always publishing all kinds of interesting info. So I thought, let's do it now. Why are we wasting any time? First of all, how have you been through COVID, and what's the news? Give everybody an update.
Well, what's the news? COVID's COVID. Governments have been stupid the way they've actually done the lockdowns. And they've realized it anyway, because, I mean, there's, according to the numbers anyway, there's higher numbers now than it was in the first wave. And yet they haven't closed down as much. So hopefully it gets better as we go. So let's see what happens.
So, I mean, you mentioned COVID and government shutdowns, but has this changed the way that the customer has behaved? I mean, you guys are the best when it comes to analyzing the way people behave in the market. So how have customers changed their behavior?
Yeah, I think that's it definitely has changed. And I think in some areas, it's definitely a really cool change, because we have to evolve into this digital transformation. But we've got to divide up. It depends on the consumer, on the market. It depends who it is. So there's some people, obviously, that it hasn't really changed the way they work or operate, because a lot of people haven't got jobs in this country, and that becomes problematic. So
absolutely.
If we talk about the customer journey, let's talk about the people that have actually had jobs, because I think that's what has changed. And I suppose marketers try and promote to people who have got jobs anyway. So So. Number one, if you just think about it, people used to wake up in the morning, get into the taxi or get into their car, drive to work. There used to be a lot of, you could check out the billboard advertising. All of a sudden, you're stuck at home.
Yeah.
You scrump out of bed. You don't get into your car, so you don't listen to the radio station any longer. But what's really cool is, from a podcasting perspective, from a YouTube perspective, people are now searching for content that they really want. So don't just get into the car, switch on to 5 FM or 702 or whatever it is, and just numbly just go to work. I think people are a little bit more active in terms of what they, and more discerning in terms of what they want to listen to and what they want to see. So the way marketers need to get to their consumers is, it needs to be a lot more discerning again.
Yeah, I think, I mean, advertising is one thing we could talk about, because that has gone through the most fundamental changes in the last couple of years, before COVID even. And now this has kind of pushed things into fifth gear, because, you know, if you haven't thought about advertising differently in the last 10 years, and you were suddenly transported into the future on a time machine and you landed now, you wouldn't be able to make any difference in the world of advertising. In fact, people would think you were an alien. They'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, that stuff's so old. Nobody does that anymore. So Ornico have just launched this amazing project, which is called the Social Media Landscape Report. You guys do it regularly. But what were the high-level insights in this survey? And I'm thinking here, because we have so many people who listen who own their own businesses. We have so many people who listen to us who want to know what's going on in the market, and this is usually a nice dipstick to tell us a little bit about that. And what are the trends? That's what's exciting.
Yeah. So, yes, I think specifically for small businesses, I think this social media space, although getting more and more crowded at the end of the day, is an opportunity for small businesses really to kind of get into this market. Not only small businesses, obviously big businesses, and they can outspend smaller businesses. But I think the way the niches are, a small business will be able to identify his niche and be able to kind of get onto Facebook and advertise. I mean, I remember my wife had a small cafe in Greenside, and the only way she could actually advertise was actually on the social media. She couldn't get onto really radio. She couldn't get onto television.
Too expensive.
It was a little bit hectic.
No.
Too expensive. Absolutely. And also, I think a lot of stuff is wasteful. Whereas when you're going onto social media, you decide, listen, I'm looking for, I don't know, at that time, hipsters, you know, and you can identify to hipsters.
By the way, that's the first time anyone has ever said, I'm looking for hipsters. Those words have never been put together in the whole world.
Extremely hypothetical. We're just speaking in generalities here. We're not actually talking about real people, obviously.
No, absolutely not.
All right. So what does the report say?
So, well, the report ultimately does. So it's a forward-looking report. So what we've done, we did a research to digital agencies, to digital departments of brands, etc. And we asked them, where are you looking to spend in the next year? And it was fascinating that 96% of brands are looking to spend on Facebook.
Wow.
And Facebook really is the biggest from a social media perspective, where most people are spending. Twitter, then it comes Twitter, WhatsApp. We kind of included WhatsApp in a social media, although it's not
It's hard to advertise
media.
There, right? I mean, you have to opt in, and there's a whole lot of other stuff. But can I be a little bit difficult before we even move on from Facebook? Because I don't know if that's because so many people who are media buyers in the agencies are old, and I'm not being disrespectful here. I'm not being disrespectful here, but I have never.
I mean, you are a little bit. It's the classic with all due respect.
Their experience.
Forget it all. I'm not going to make excuses. Oresti, Facebook is really for quite old people now, and I don't know anyone under the age of 50 who's ever seen a Facebook ad. And you're telling me 96% of the digital agencies are looking to spend their money on Facebook.
That
sounds like
scary.
That sounds like a terrible decision. Are these people blind?
Yeah, it is kind of quite. I thought you were going to say, old or resty, can you please answer this question?
No, listen. No. There's a huge difference. You're the one who's bringing us the research. That's different. These people might be making the wrong decision, but that's not for you to comment on, right?
Okay, well, let me just tell you what old or resty thinks. I think you're right. Gareth, I think, but not only because older people are on Facebook, but I think with these privacy issues, I think a lot of people are really concerned. And as far as I can see, we haven't done research in terms of how many people are actually actively on it. I mean, we looked at active users on Facebook, etc. But really, anecdotally, a lot of people are not really on Facebook like they used to anyway.
Right.
You know, so they're kind of pulling off that platform, not only because they're bored with it, but also because the privacy issues have become a little bit of a mission. And it's not that Twitter hasn't got privacy issues. It doesn't mean that some of the other platforms don't. But I think it's really a big thing with Facebook at the end of the day. So, yeah.
Let's just do a quick around the room here. And if anyone who's listening to us wants to join in, this might be interesting too. Have you ever bought anything off of Facebook? Oresti, have you ever bought anything off of Facebook?
No,
Bulelo?
No, I haven't.
Lebang?
I have.
You have?
I've bought furniture off Facebook, yeah.
Really?
I bought a furniture and a microphone. You know what, to be honest with you.
Bulelo, is it just me?
He says, sorry, I don't know if there's maybe a problem there. He says he's bought furniture and a microphone off of Facebook. So he's the only one out of the four of us who has, but there's something interesting.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, though, I mean, we did a campaign for rental. We've got some property in Sandton that we're looking to rent. And we did it on all the social media platforms. And I must tell you, though, surprisingly enough, I got many more leads from Facebook than I did on any of the other platforms, I must tell you, which is kind of quite surprising. But I also do think because the existing tenants within the building were also retweeting, reposting, etc.
Yeah,
it could be that. I'm not sure, but
just doing a quick whip around on the audience here. So Venant says he has many times bought on Facebook. Stuart says no, not on Facebook. Kuhle and Daniela, no. Kyle says only Facebook Marketplace. So obviously, I mean, this is what's interesting about the research, and you guys have such a database of people to ask that, and it's varied and it's diverse and it's interesting. You're going to get a lot of different responses, but it's important, obviously, that you collate these into something useful. So what are the key insights for businesses based on the social media landscape report that you guys put together? And who has access to all this data and what can they do with it?
Yeah. So I think, because it's a face, a forward-looking research, ultimately it's really for brands to kind of have a look and see what are the competitors doing, where do they think their competitors are going to be advertising in the next year, but also which are the major platforms, and the top platforms was actually Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, and WhatsApp. It came in that particular order. What was really interesting was a lot of brands tried things like Clubhouse. They tried Clubhouse. It wasn't effective at all.
No.
Could be a whole lot of reasons. I think there was a huge buzz and a huge storm,
yeah,
and everybody kind of jumped on it.
Yeah.
And
I think,
yeah. Not many people then stayed on it. The Telegram, again, they've tried some of Telegram and it hasn't really worked. Snapchat, in this country, very little. So I think they needed to concentrate Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Although I have to say things like TikTok are starting to really look quite good for specifically smaller brands, because they still got that opportunity to play in a space that there's not a lot of other people within that space, and you can get really, really creative.
Yeah.
And it's such a creative space, TikTok. And you can think out the box, whereas most big brands are too scared to think out the box.
There's an interesting question here from Gareth, which I think, I'm going to throw this in too, because, you know, many people are going to ask very specific things, and it seems like he's somebody who's got a very particular question. It's probably chasing client made up KPIs, key performance indicators, for their bonuses instead of what will be good for the brand. That happens a lot too, right? I mean, I see you clapping, so you agree with that, Oresti?
Oh, sure. You have no idea. I mean, we're part of an organization called AMIC. Now, what AMIC is, a worldwide organization, actually, that talks about measurement and evaluation of communication. And they've created a model, really, in terms of how do you frame your success of your campaigns?
Mm-hmm.
Because why are you doing a campaign? You're really doing it to increase sales.
Yeah.
There's no real other reason why you're actually doing any marketing. Yes, you're doing marketing so that you can build your brand, but you're building your brand so that you can have more sales.
Sure.
A lot of the times, so what happens is a lot of the times KPIs that Gareth is talking about is against a financial value. Let's say it's ad spend. It could be advertising value equivalent, which is such a crazy non-number, or even for that matter, a growth in Twitter followers.
Right.
So I had a whole huge growth in Twitter followers, but actually none of them are going to buy my brand.
Yeah.
That's not a KPI. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I agree fully with that, but it's an easy metric. So what happens is it's there because you can see I had 10 followers and now I've got 100 followers, and therefore my platform has grown. But no one's bought from me, you know?
So they're measuring that, they seem to be often the businesses themselves, and sometimes their agencies are measuring the wrong thing.
Yeah, a lot of the times it's measuring the wrong thing. What you need to do is really look at what impact has my campaign had at the end of the day. What are the objectives? Number one, what are the objectives of the company? So when they went to a strategy session and the C-suite decided this is the direction we're taking the business in, then you break those business objectives down into marketing objectives. How is the marketing department going to actually fulfill those objectives that the business actually that needs, that they're looking for? And from those objectives, create campaigns around those particular objectives and measure and evaluate your campaigns against those particular marketing objectives that will reach the business goals. And sometimes you're going to achieve it and sometimes you're not. But what's cool about it is if you are measuring against those objectives, if you're not, you can evaluate it and say, okay, these are the reasons why I went wrong. Let me adapt my campaigns. And that's what we try and sell a lot of the times. Yeah.
So Aldo Resti, I don't know if you can hear me now.
What did you say? Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, as we were talking and Gareth had mentioned Facebook, and I know it almost feels like you got to be old to be on Facebook, but I would think then, and I'd like to hear your feedback, is I would want to be on Facebook if the old people are there because old people have money. Like 25-year-olds don't have money, as cool as it is to be on Instagram. Or do you think young people tell their moms, so mom, you will buy it? How does it work in your world? Okay. I don't want to talk to 25-year-olds. I want the money person, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I'm not so sure. Okay. So let's look at it this way. So again, I'm part of PAMRA, which is Pan-African Media Research Organization. It's a research organization across Africa. And what's really exciting is Africa's got young people. Europe has got old people. Mm. Old people are retiring. They want to get rid of all their gumph at the end of the day. Young people are moving into homes. They want to buy furniture. They want to buy a car. They want to dress up. They want to look cool. So actually, younger people are the ones that are actually buying. Older people are getting rid of stuff. So, gotcha. So that's the one issue. But you have a point, and we've got to look at it. And there's young people at 18 years old, and there's young people or media kind of middle-aged people at 35 or 40 years old. The 35 or 40 year old have got money at the end of the day. Well, some.
35. I don't. I'm 35. Yeah. I've known that. I hear you.
Gareth, I heard that.
Mulelo, can I help you a bit there? We just recently did an interview for these Gen Next Awards that are coming up. And one of the companies that I spoke to was Yellowwood, who obviously specialize in research, etc. They literally told us facts. And the facts are, in South Africa, the people that have the actual decision-making power is the youth. They are the ones that influence the people with the money on how to buy and what to buy. And it's funny that all the advertising is like actually focused not on the youth. So I'm actually quite sad, Oresti, to hear that 90% of advertising is going into Facebook, where quite clearly Facebook is not directly where the youth are. We still have quite a way to go. But just to help you, Mbulelo, the reason is that it's facts. The numbers show statistically.
Let's just be clear, like Oresti is not the one who's sending that 96% of money to Facebook. He's just doing the research. He's just telling us what's happening. So
it's not shoot the messenger.
Yeah, if you want to,
Oresti, you're in the clear.
Yeah, if you want to shoot the messenger, then you're doing the wrong thing here, because he's just looking at the research. So if they're spending on Facebook and on other social media platforms, what has that done to television, radio, outdoor advertising? What's happened to those people?
So can I just correct the bang stuff? So it's 96% of their social media budget is going into Facebook, not the full budget.
Right. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So because we remember we only did a social media landscape. We only looked at the social media at the end of the day.
Right.
So in terms of some of the other platforms, there's no doubt that the beginning of COVID, depending on the – and again, you got to – when you're marketing or these big questions, sometimes you've got to break them down, because what has happened within television, let's say, for instance. Well, within television, guys like the restaurant industry and the alcohol industry had to pull out of it, specifically at the beginning of COVID. Mm-hmm. But pharmaceutical companies and the online stores were actually advertising a hell of a lot more. So it just depends on, you know, on who's advertising, which platform. And a lot of people at the beginning of COVID, everybody was just watching television, not sure why, because all you heard was COVID, 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 and occasionally COVID. So, so it was kind of crazy. And I think, you know, people kind of flocked to television, and the television numbers went up. And if television numbers are going to go up, obviously the advertisers are going to follow.
Yeah.
But I think since then, there's no doubt you can see there has been a drop off in those television numbers. So there's no doubt that the spend will also start dropping off at the end of the day. You know, and I think brands need to be a lot cleverer with their advertising, because they have got less money to actually put behind advertising. So they need to get clever. They need to look at different platforms, be creative, make sure that you're not where everybody else is, so that you can stand out in the crowd at the end of the day. But more, even more important than any of that, is identify your target market. Who is that person that you're actually advertising to? You know, and identify what is the personality, who's that persona. And what's nice about the digital space is that you can identify smallest and smaller groups of people to actually advertise to.
Daniela says something that I think may be true in a number of circumstances. It may not be true for all the agencies, but Daniela says agencies are so deeply out of touch with people. Digital and traditional, and brands ultimately suffer. No,
yeah.
If I read that properly, but yeah, I get the gist of it. I mean, I do think, like, the old agency model, Oresti, are you finding like that's delivering the goods like it used to in the old days?
Mm-mm, sure. Remember, I got into this industry in 1984, like you said.
Yeah.
So you've kind of seen so many changes, and I think. And maybe I'm old, but I'm also an accountant, which maybe is problematic. Uh-huh. So agencies are now run by accountants. And I think that's not, it's not cool, because you're only looking at the numbers. And I think Martin Sorrell is to blame for this. Sorry, I'm going to put that squarely into his, into that space. But I mean, in the older you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was kind of run by creatives. And I think agencies must be run by creatives. You need to take this brand, understand its values, understand where do you want to do it, and shoot it out the park by being really, really creative at the end of the day. And I'm painting all the agencies with the same brush, and that's not entirely true, because there's some amazingly creative agencies out there. But I think the model has to change. There's no doubt about it. You've got to look at it differently.
So there's so much of this data in your reports, and it must be difficult for you also to know what to extract, what is going to be useful, when and how. Do you have a whole lot of algorithms that you put into this? Do you have people who actually crunch the numbers manually? What's the way that you guys do this at Ornico? Because you are masters at it, and you have been doing it for a very long time.
So we utilize both technology and human beings. I really do not believe technology can do it alone, because technology does make mistakes. So we have algorithms. Let's say an algorithm will pick up an ad. Yeah. And the way it picks up an ad is you need a human being to identify the ad first. So you'll find this ad. You will then put the brand and all the details on it. And you create a fingerprint. You put it into the system. And every single time this ad appears, it will put it into your database.
Right.
The same thing happens with content. So you put certain keywords out. Your algorithm picks up those keywords. But sometimes if you're looking for, let's say, APSA, it might give you absolutely.
Okay.
So you need a human being to ultimately look at it and say, this is not the right
filter,
the right clip. We need to, so we utilize human beings from that perspective. And we do some automated reports. But again, automated reports are just high-level statistical kind of stuff. If you really want in-depth intellectual analysis, you really need human beings to be able to do that.
And Oresti, what's your advice to businesses when it comes to evaluating the measure of their marketing? I mean, a lot of people spend a huge amount of money on marketing and they don't really get those returns. With all your years of experience and your business that does the analysis of this at a micro, macro, and every in-between level, what would you say is the best way for a business owner, whether it's a small business or a big one, to figure out whether it's working or not?
To decide what are your, as I said earlier, it's to decide what are your objectives. I think that's the absolute critical, and it's not just vanity numbers, okay? Mm. What are your real objective for this particular campaign, and is it aligned to the business objectives?
Yeah.
And once you do that, start measuring against those particular, against that particular criteria. Understand who your target market is, who your segment is, and market to that particular segment, and change your advertising for that particular segment. If you've got, and I'm going to use it very broadly because you can actually break it down even more than that, but if you're looking at 35-year-old in Bolelos, market to him. You know what I'm saying? If you're looking for a 60-year-old Orestes, market to him, you know, at the end of the day. Yeah. But also, you can also, if you don't need to, you don't always have to do it only that way. Look at the tribes and hipsters. Tribe could be a tribe. Not anymore, I know. But I'm saying just look at likes. What do people do? What is their customer journey at the end of the day? And actually meet them where they actually are and don't be intrusive. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's also true, right? The hard sell approach is just not going to work anymore. The people don't like being being sold things. They want to be involved in a conversation that could lead them to buy something, but they don't want it to be like too direct and too obvious. It's kind of patronizing, right?
Yeah, and tell the story. And that's why I say the creatives are the ones that should lead it. A beautiful story. I mean, people love beautiful stories. It's been happening forever. You know what I'm saying? So let's just tell those beautiful stories about your brand and what they do, you know?
Well, yeah. Anything you want to throw in, Lebang? This is an area of expertise for you.
Yeah, I just wanted to, get your opinion, Orestes, about this transformation that we're seeing within advertising. So as you mentioned, and I love that you said that creative to be at the core and at the top of these agencies. We're seeing now the shift where, in as much as we want creators to be at the core of these agencies, it's not happening. And it's kind of obvious when the wrong people are telling these stories. So how are we going to successfully get the right people in the position to tell these stories so that the right people that we're targeting can purchase our products and buy these brands, et cetera, et cetera? I think there's like a cloud currently happening in advertising, like a transformation where the audience can see right through the BS. Like we can see when, you know, the wrong person is speaking. And I just want to know from your many, many years of experience, like what's your opinion on this? How can we get there faster? How can we get the right people in these places?
At least you can't, not like Gareth who called me old. At least you just said lots of experience. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. No. So in actual fact, I don't think it's ever changed. Even if you look at, if you're going to the 80s, I mean, a lot of people were advertising to the wrong to the wrong people. I think what you need to do is kind of really understand, and you can see the BS consistently, and there's a lot of BS in it. So firstly, everything must be data-driven, because if you can get insights into a particular target market, into a segment, into a lifestyle, then you can start advertising, understand people's minds, what's going between those two ears at the end of the day, and what are their likes, what are their dislikes, and actually play to those emotional filters that human beings are always open to. You know what I'm saying? As soon as you press those emotional buttons, people aspire to it, you know, at the end of the day, you know, and you need to tell those beautiful stories and get the right people to tell those stories at the end of the day. But I think the right people, but also with the right data, because sometimes you miss those nuances and you need those nuances in it, and you need both the emotional side of it and the data side of it to actually get the right mix. at the end of the day.
Oresti, we could talk to you all day, and I wouldn't run out of things to talk to you about. So it's good to have you on the show. But if people want to find out more, and perhaps for businesses that really want to do a deep dive into what's going on, look at these reports, they can find out more by talking to you guys at Ornico, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're always open to debate it and discuss it. And yeah,
brilliant. Brilliant.
And guide them through, and guide them a lot of that time through these measurements, through this measurement stuff, because I think that's what's really critical, what will get advertising done much better.
Huge. I mean, and there's so much to know. There's no limit to the amount of information that you can get into if you're really interested. So thanks, Oresti. Always good to catch up with you. And thanks for answering all of our questions and for putting up with how rude Lebang and Bulelo were to you this morning.
No, I know. Right. Cheers, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Oresti. Oresti Patricius from Ornico. So it's always good to check in with him. And it's been a while since we last did that. So why the hell not? I also have to wrap it up for this morning. He's terrific. He's really fun. Have to wrap it up for this morning because we're already at 8 o'clock, and we will see you tomorrow, bright and early. Have an excellent spring day. Get out there into the sun. Celebrate that everything is bursting into bloom. The birds are chirping, and that life is
thongs are out.
Thongs.
Let's see them thong.
All right, everybody. See you tomorrow. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.